Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you do have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you're feeling a little radio shy and you have a question for me or for my guest, you can write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. I just want to make a couple of announcements before I introduce my very special guest for tonight. But I want to remind people that I'm having my upcoming healing weekend, first weekend in October, here in Philadelphia this year. And if you're interested in any of the details, please write to me at bonkay@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send it to you. Our healing weekends are miraculous for the women who attend them. They leave with a sense of unity and with a sense of friendship and understanding. And when we're going through the situation feeling so isolated, this is the time to meet other women and bond. So write to me at bonkay@aol.com or look for information in my upcoming newsletter. My upcoming newsletter will be coming out in 2 days, and if you're not on my mailing list and you would like to be on the mailing list, just write to me and let me know. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome my very special guest tonight, who's a man who I'm so excited is joining us. I didn't know from this man a couple of months ago, and somebody really turned me on to him, and I was just so amazed. His name is Ross Rosenberg. And he's out in the Chicago area. And one of my listeners to the show said, I want you to see this book. It's just amazing. It's called The Human Magnet Syndrome, Why We Love People Who Hurt Us. And it sounded just so fascinating. I took a look at Amazon, read a little bit about it, ordered the book. And I've lent it to several people, and two people I know who also bought the book. They're just like, we are now part of your human magnet, Ross. We're drawn to you. Well, I think we're going to be stalking you soon. You're going to find yourself with a lot of destructive women around you pretty soon. But I'm just so impressed with you. Thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure, and I'm so glad that you're doing your radio show, because it's a voice and a message that needs to be heard.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we've been doing the show for 5 years, and we get maybe around 22,000 women a year, 22,000 women each month from our stats that are listening. So the show is a lifeline to many of them, and by having somebody like you on the show, who really has so much to say. We've had a lot of therapists on here who are wonderful, but you really seem to hit it on the nail, because to be honest with you, a lot of our husbands, gay is really like the least problem. It's everything that goes with it as far as having narcissistic behaviors. And I'm not sure if that comes from living a lie on a daily basis. I think that some of these things can be developed. I know other speakers really believe that this is inborn and doesn't change. But, you know, we have narcissists, we have sociopaths, borderline. We have everything in this group of gay husbands. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about your work that you're doing with people in general?
Well, I've been a psychotherapist for 28 years, and, you know, I've been fortunate in my career to work with a cross-section of, you know, kind of the general public, men, women, children, teenagers, straight, gay, bi. And my most recent work has been working with codependents, or people who find themselves perpetually and almost magnetically drawn into relationship types that are destructive, in which they're compelled to be the caretaker, the lover, the rescuer, and always waiting and wanting and hoping for that person to do the same, but never happening, but still staying in a relationship. So those codependents are reading my book, going to my YouTube site, and seeking therapy through me.
On top of that, what I love so much about your book, among the many, many things, the first one is the fact that you're very honest in this book about your own life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people can really make a connection by realizing it's not just you. Here's a man who came from a basically good background, a good family, who also found himself in a number of dysfunctional relationships. Is that correct? Am I phrasing that right?
Well, it's close. You know, I came from a pretty dysfunctional family, but in my book, what I explain is that there's no families that are perfectly normal. And if you are a child of a parent who's a narcissist, you got to figure out a way to survive that. And in my family, you know, I had one parent who was a narcissist, and the way that I survived it and got as much love as I did was I figured out how to be the kid to get the compliments, the kids to be the helper. I was always tuned in to what everyone else needed, and that's how I got my love. And as I've seen, and so many people who are codependent, they come from similar families where the only way that they were able to feel important and feel loved is they had to sacrifice their own needs and desires. And when that happens to you so early in life, what happens is a relationship template is created. The way that you survive in a relationship, in your early childhood relationship, manifests in codependency as an adult. And because of that, you find the narcissist strangely appealing, strangely familiar, and you find yourself falling in love with that person. And in my book, I talk about that. But as dysfunctional as my family was, I think that the goal is to take a look at ourselves as adults and take accountability and stock in who we are so we can change our patterns, not reflect on what happened to us, but who we can be in the future.
Ross, is it possible that you could come from a basically functional family? I also came from a dysfunctional family back in the 1960s, and I thought that we were the only dysfunctional family back then. You know, I came from an upper-middle-class Jewish family living in the suburbs of Philadelphia, and I came from the first divorced family, which back in those days was really considered, you know, something that was not really talked about too much. And there was a social stigma that was attached to it. And I certainly felt it back then. Today, I think when you have a married couple, that's a stigma. Most kids today don't know what that is. But going back to those days, there were families that seemed relatively functional. And I do know couples now as adults who are really functional. And yet, is it still possible to grow up feeling codependent, even if you come from a functional family?
No, actually, it's not. And I go to great pains at both talking about it in my book, and I'm writing it in my second book. Codependency is, although it's not officially recognized as a disorder, it's a result of what I call attachment trauma, or what we call attachment trauma, that the childhood experience with a narcissistic parent was psychologically harmful. And to survive that type of childhood, that child is going to experience trauma, scarring of sorts, that manifests as an adult. Codependency, to be an adult and be attracted to people that are harmful, that hurt you, that won't love you, won't take care of you, won't respect you, trying to get them to change and them not changing and you staying in that relationship, that's a psychological problem. And that type of personality is created from early childhood trauma. Now, to be fair, not everyone who is a caretaker is a codependent. Being a caretaker is a personality type. But being a caretaker and being with a hurtful and harmful people and staying in those relationships, something went wrong in the development of that person's self-esteem, self-concept, or just ability to love themselves. So that can almost always be traced into that early childhood trauma of being raised by a narcissist.
How about when there's other forms of dysfunction in a home? Does that affect perhaps codependency as well? Let's say if there's abuse in a home, if there's alcoholism or drugs.
Yeah, one of the things, the other thing that I try to point out in my book is that what I do is I don't try to explain everything. There are so many environmental, genetic, financial influences on the development of someone's personality. And who we are and who we become and how we are is a result of so many factors. Many we can identify, you know, some that are kind of vague, like our genes. So if we were raised by an alcoholic father, who wasn't a narcissist, well, that's going to impact our personality, and it's going to play out in our adulthood. But it's not going to be if that father was a narcissist and harmful and abusive, then that's going to impact our personality development. So it's impossible for me to say what creates what personality type or personality problem. All that I can speak about tonight is what creates codependency, as I understand it, and narcissism, and why codependents and narcissists always, and I mean almost always, find themselves attracted to each other. And that's the part I can speak confidently about.
And I think what you say is so true, and that's kind of my philosophy. I don't ask questions of what was. I'd like to try to deal with what is and have a change of what will be. Because, like you mentioned, you can find dysfunction wherever you go, and you can't necessarily pinpoint it, but you can deal with the situation. But I do say it's really important to know yourself before you move on to another relationship. And
I think
that's where people really fall short. You know, they have a tendency to be codependent. Do you feel this could be partially due to self-esteem issues also?
No, as I said before, codependency is a result of, and it's clearly articulated in my YouTube videos and my book, codependency is a result of attachment trauma. So let me explain what codependency is so we have a better understanding of it. Codependency, in my book, I redefined it because there are so many different definitions of codependency that the term itself doesn't have any solid clinical weight anymore. It means something to someone else. So codependency is a psychological problem that manifests in relationships. It's when you allow yourself to be in a relationship in which you are respecting, caring, and loving a person, giving to them all that you can with hopes of some sort of reciprocity or mutuality, give and take. And that person not only does not return it, they don't want to make you feel loved, respected, and cared for. And when you push back for it, they still don't give it to you. But see, that in itself is not codependency. But what really, what makes the codependent is the person stays in that relationship. And that's the area, what we've called it, the dysfunction or psychopathology. You stay in a relationship that's harmful for you. And as I understand it, it's like an addiction. You keep hoping that this person, like a drug, will make you feel good. You remember the times it made you feel good, and you keep pursuing that. And then you find out that it never gave you what you wanted, but you stay with it. So codependency is specifically a psychological problem in which you stay with harmful people, and you don't leave that, which means you keep yourself in psychological and sometimes physical peril.
Now, if the relationship does end, and it may not be due to you at all, it might be the other person, you're not walks away from it, is that person going to look for another kind of codependent relationship if there's no intervention?
Yeah, well, actually, good point. I talk about the continuum of self theory, in which I kind of create this numerical representation of people who are caretakers and people who are more self-centered. And according to the human magnet syndrome theory, the name of my book, we are attracted to people that are perfectly matched to us in our personality type in the opposite way. A mild caretaker who's not a codependent, say they're a therapist, a radio show host, a teacher, just likes to take care of people, is always going to be attracted to someone who's mildly self-centered. And that in itself is not bad. It doesn't necessarily mean they're narcissistic. But there's something that powerfully that is unconscious that directs our attraction patterns, and that's the human magnet syndrome. So if you are a codependent, like a dancing couple, you are going to seek someone to dance with that feels right, that knows their role, and you fit with their role. The follower fits with the leader, and that is why when codependents meet narcissists, they feel. And both of them feel so much in love, and the passion and the intensity of that initial part of the relationship is so explosive, is because they feel perfect with each other. And that's and of course, that doesn't last that long. So, yeah, codependents are always going to fall in love with narcissists and narcissists vice versa until the psychotherapy, you know, if someone gets into psychotherapy and works out the reasons for which they have been codependent.
I'd just like to mention one little paragraph you have in your book that I think is so important, where you say, codependency don't dance. The inherently dysfunctional codependency dance requires two opposite but distinctly balanced partners, the pleaser-fixer, who's the codependent, and the take-controller, who's a narcissistic addict. Codependents who are giving, sacrificing, and consumed with the needs and the desires of others do not know how to emotionally disconnect or avoid romantic relationships with individuals who are narcissistic, individuals who are selfish, self-centered, controlling, and harmful to them. Codependents habitually find themselves on a dance floor, attracted to partners who are a perfect countermatch to their uniquely passive, submissive, and acquiescent dance style. And I think this is like such a great point that it's one need feeding into another need. And I always say with narcissists, as long as you can feed them, they love you. But as soon as you stop feeding them, you become their enemy.
Right.
Or they have no use for you at that point.
And if you're codependent, you stay in that relationship. If you're not, you're just one of the many that get burned by them. But let me tell you the story behind the dance, that dance excerpt you read from my book. I had been married twice and divorced twice, and it wasn't until I wrote my book that I decided to tell people, because I was so ashamed of it. I kept it a secret because as a therapist, I thought I should know better. So in therapy, a moment of clarity happened when my therapist said, the problem that you have, actually it was a friend who, the details are less important, but it's in my book, but this person told me that the problem with you, Ross, is you have a broken picker. You keep picking the same type of person over and over again that who seems so perfect, but ends up hurting you. But see, in that moment of time, I realized this was not about these bad people. I realized that I had something to do with it. My attraction was to these controlling, sexy, directive, kind of charming woman. I never thought that I wanted a narcissist. I just liked a certain personality type. And like the dance, there's a certain person that I kind of knew how to be with in a relationship. I knew how to listen and take care of people and be compassionate. And they knew how to take charge. And that dance got started. And once it gets started, you get so locked up into it that you're afraid to leave it because that's all you know. How many people do you know that have either divorced someone who was a narcissist but didn't do the therapy, or the narcissist divorced them, and they keep saying the people that they're dating, the ones that are good for them, there's no chemistry, or the person that likes the bad boy or the bad girl. There's something about the excitement of the narcissist that somehow triggers the codependent. And that's the danger, and that's the heart and soul of the human magnet syndrome.
I think it's pretty common, though, because of the fact that often women who are codependents or caretakers, and I understand there's a difference, but there are some similarities as well. You know, they're mm-hmm. always looking to fix things and fix situations and fix people. They're looking mm-hmm. for that ultimate challenge, maybe not consciously, but maybe that's what attracts them to that bad boy issue that you were talking about. Broken men who really cannot be fixed, but they're going to try as hard as they can anyway because they mm-hmm. feel it will validate them as their role as a caretaker or as a helper, which makes
exactly.
them feel better about themselves.
Exactly.
And that's why... is that right?
Yes, and so it's absolutely right. But now we take exactly what you've said and we kind of we parallel it with their childhood. That here's a person that spent the formative part of their lives living with a parent who could only love them if they just could take care of them. They learned early on that love is by caring for someone. They felt secure because if they didn't take care of that person, they would not have had love and security. So that's embedded deep in every codependent psyche. They all had the same story. That we can go back into our childhood and remember the narcissistic parent and how we became the gift child, the trophy child. So because of that, when a codependent meets a narcissist, there's something that feels familiar. It's unconscious. It's like they know what to do. They know how to help someone. They know how to sacrifice. And that strangely feels attractive to them until they get hurt. So, yes, it's a pattern that stays with them even in the relationship and after the relationship.
Ross, I wanted to ask you your opinion on narcissism. Do you feel that it's nature versus nurture, combination, developed under certain circumstances? What is your concept of it?
My concept is with many people in the field, narcissism is created, or many personality disorders are created from an abusive and a neglectful childhood. In fact, what I teach people is that the same parents can create a narcissist sibling and a codependent sibling. And the difference between why one sibling can be a codependent and a narcissist is how they coped with the same parent. The child that somehow became... that somehow made the parent feel like they were the fantasy child. When the child makes the parent feel good about themselves, remember, this parent is a narcissist. That parent loves and cares for this child. And this child, and so we talked about that. That's a developmental trajectory of future codependent. But what about the child that cannot make the mom or dad happy? That is a disappointment that angers that parent. Now, that could be genetic. Let's say they have... anxiety, or they have ADD, or they're colicky, or they just aren't as pretty or handsome. But whatever about this child, that when a narcissist has a child, they need the child to make them feel alive and worthy, and this child has to create that parenting fantasy. The child that doesn't is seen as as a danger to them. So we look at any narcissist, and we know that if we don't make them feel good, if we embarrass them, we criticize them, they strike back with a narcissistic injury. This young child is constantly triggering their parents, and this child is damaged far worse than the codependent child. The child is going to be codependent. Excuse me. So many people know this, that if someone identifies themselves as codependent, they will talk about that they're going to have a narcissist or two in their SIP group, because it. So to answer your question, narcissism or other personality disorders are mainly created because of extreme neglect, abuse, and deprivation. And it is a psychological medical phenomenon, because as you are denied love, attention, and you're in an abusive environment, that affects the brain development and the neural networks, and then it becomes a physical phenomenon or a medical phenomenon. But it starts as an environmental psychological process.
Do you feel it's a curable phenomenon?
Can you repeat that, please?
Do you believe that it's a curable phenomenon?
The problem with these personality disorders is there are certain therapy treatments that are long-term that can work, but you have to know you have a problem in order to go to therapy. The definition,
exactly.
one of the primary defining criterion of narcissistic personality disorder is they don't believe they have a problem and they blame other people. Getting a person to go to therapy and staying in therapy is very, very difficult and often quite rare if the therapist talks about narcissism. However, there are a lot of therapists who just coddle their client, their narcissistic client, and that's the type of therapy the narcissist can stay in for a lifetime. So there are certain therapy approaches that are research proven that can work, but the probability that a narcissist goes to that therapy and stays in it is often very low.
Because I think with the narcissist, as we have found it within women who are part of our support network, often with a narcissist, they don't want to be criticized or questioned, and not like the therapist is criticizing them, but maybe challenging that everything isn't exactly the way they're seeing it. So we have people who are part of that, you know, disorder who will go once or twice and then say the therapist doesn't know what he's talking about, or this is not for me, or I don't have a problem. You're the one who has a problem because you feel you need therapy. And so you go nowhere.
I'm accused often of having bias. So I'll tell you ahead of time that that's what I'm accused of. But here's my bias, is that when I work with codependents and they get healthy, and they get healthy in individual therapy and they start to set boundaries, they start to have self-esteem. If someone has a personality disorder, they will do whatever they can to push that person back into compliance. And if they can't, and if they don't comply, they will ratchet it up. And eventually the codependent will leave the relationship, because as they grow and the ability to take care of themselves, to love themselves, to set boundaries, to feel like they have an integrity base, they don't want to deal with the control and the harm of the narcissist. See, the narcissist does not know how to be in a unconditionally loving and accepting relationship. So eventually, the codependent outgrows that narcissist. The only hope is for the narcissist to get into therapy. And by definition, as I explained earlier, people with that personality disorder infrequently get into therapy. And so it doesn't last. It breaks down. And some people get upset that I talk that way. But I find that the codependents need to know reliable information, so they know exactly what's going to happen if they go to therapy. Because if not, you're setting them. It's like sending an alcoholic into detox and telling them, "Oh yeah, it'll be a piece of cake," and they start to get sick and nauseous and they start to shake. Well, they're out of there. And I think the codependents need to know the initial uphill battle, and then know the rewards for their work in months to come.
Ross, do you find it a challenge to work with people who are codependent when you know there's a driving force against you from the narcissistic person whom they're living with, who is making their lives miserable because they're trying to become their own person? Because that happens a lot with our women. You know, they are really trying. They don't want to be stuck forever in a horrible situation.
Mm-hmm.
But they find themselves, every inch they walk forward, you know, the husband grabs them and pulls them 2 inches back, making them feel worse or selfish, or you don't care about, you know, your family. They try every approach to make them stay sick instead of get better.
Well, and what you're talking about is not a phenomenon with gay men and straight wives or
I'm saying just narcissists in general.
Well, but what we're talking about is a gay spouse who has sociopathic tendencies, where
mm-hmm.
they're gaslighting their partner because the only way that they can remain in control and get what they need, and that is the facade of normality, while they get to play and be the gay person. When I say normality, I mean they're pretending to be in this monogamous heterosexual relationship, because being in a monogamous homosexual relationship is normal also, but it's living a lie that is harmful. So the gaslighting and the sociopathy that we see in these relationships can only work with the codependent. So that is why in my book, The Human Magnet Syndrome, I talk about these pathological narcissists or emotional manipulators are either sociopaths or people with antisocial personality disorder, narcissists or borderlines and addicts, because these are the folks that know how to manipulate people in order to get
mm-hmm.
them to take care, be taken care of. But then you throw a sociopath, someone who lies and without having empathy, that must be a horrible experience for the woman that you work with, that you help and reach out to.
Yes, it is a horrible experience. That was the other point I wanted to ask you about. I rarely find that narcissism just goes independently without some of these other disorders with it, such as borderline personality, sociopathic behavior. A new disorder that I just became aware of recently, maybe you're more aware of it than I was, chaos addiction to chaos.
Mm.
And I actually know people who are like that. In fact, I think I was married to one of them. But the thing is that, they're addicted to chaos. Their life cannot go in a smooth way. It's always, let me create a problem so I can be the center of attention. There's a whole thing on this now I'm just reading about. So
mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of times these disorders kind of just walk hand in hand with each other. I think with sociopathy, I mean, I know that a lot of people really believe that it's something that comes more from genetics than from environment, but I do feel that when people live a lie every day of their life, that lying becomes inherent. I mean, they can just do it.
Yeah.
You're living
a
lie every day, so it takes nothing to lie.
Well, first of all, a lot of people can believe anything, but when decades of research show the same thing, then it's just people with opinions and then there's science. And the research shows that narcissism and BPD and sociopathy or ASPD are caused primarily by traumatic childhood. So, but you said something interesting, that disorders go hand in hand. We call that co-occurring disorders. So what I did in my book is I took these four disorders: narcissistic personality disorder, borderline, ASPD, antisocial personality disorder, and addiction, and I call them all emotional manipulators or pathological narcissists. Even though
mm-hmm.
the disorders are all, they're different, but they all have a narcissistic core. So when I say
mm-hmm.
narcissist, I am a pathological narcissism, I am talking about a core personality construct, not necessarily a disorder. So you can have narcissistic personality disorder and be severely narcissistic. You can be a borderline or a psychopath. But when we talk about coexisting disorders, often we find that borderlines or people with ASPD or sociopathy, there's depression, there's anxiety, there's addictions, and these disorders clump together. And the narcissists are very rarely just a person that's defined by that one disorder.
Let me ask your opinion on this, because this affects some of our women, the issue of sexual addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally feel this way, and it may be totally different than other people feel. I just feel like life wasn't meant to be this complicated, period. That some of these
mm-hmm.
problems would just take so much work, so much effort, they drain you so much emotionally, and they have no guarantees at all, except that they usually fail, like in any addiction. But do you see success with sexual addiction?
Well, you know, first of all, I should say to your listeners that before I wrote my book, The Human Magnet Syndrome, I was known for my specialty and expertise in sex addiction. And
mm-hmm.
So I have a very strong background in that area. And sex addiction is like any addiction. It could consume you and have absolutely horrendous effects on your life, sometimes long-term and permanent. But there is hope for these addictions, whether it's sex, love, porn. If you get into treatment with a qualified, experienced therapist, for example, I have a CSAT, which is a certification in sex addiction treatment.
Uh-huh.
Not very few people understand exactly what a sex addiction is, and codependency for that matter, but it's not that you need to understand it, you need to know how to treat it. And there are remarkable ways that can change a person's life, and where they can, just like with alcoholism, people, if they put their mind and their heart and their courage together, they can achieve sobriety. And I've been a part of that process with so many clients, and I've seen it. So there's absolute hope for these women and men. They just have to face the very hard truth of their life.
So but the person really has to want to make that change, correct?
Absolutely. When we're dealing with codependency, and I'm writing about this now, I look at codependency as an addiction. And you're addicted to the trauma, as you talked about, the chaos concept. They feel needed and important when there's a lot of trouble going on for which they need to fix or solve. Now, they will always complain and act as if they don't like it, which is true, but that's all they know. And if there's no drama, no chaos, it's a lifestyle that they don't have any experience with, and they get anxious and nervous. And so if you stop that, it would be like stopping someone from smoking. They're not getting that chemical rush. So what I noticed that when I work with my codependents and I frame it as an addiction, and I explain the number one withdrawal symptom of codependency is acute loneliness, terrible loneliness. And I actually made a YouTube video. I should say to your listeners, I have a YouTube channel that has 65 videos, and I think has almost 1.5 million views. But loneliness is the problem that draws all the codependents back into these relationships. Just like the sex addict, the alcoholic, or any type of addict, those withdrawals are irrational, and they pull them back to something that they believe feels good, but ends up harming them so badly.
So for the person who's in a codependent relationship, if you had to be a betting guy, would you bet
mm-hmm.
the chances are greater that the codependent has a better chance of moving on than the narcissist?
If I'm a betting man, first of all, I don't even like the concept, so I'm gonna answer your question another way.
Okay.
But it all depends on if the codependent's in therapy, the narcissist is screwed. It's not going to last. If the codependent's in good therapy, but if the codependent is trapped and believes in the insanity that the narcissist has kind of woven for them as their life, and the probability is high that they're going to stay there because no one is introducing the concept that it can be different. That is why I hope that my book, these talk shows, these radio shows, give hope to codependents, because I'm a living example that you can go to therapy and change that part of us that created our codependency, which is the trauma that we experience in these relationships, more about the trauma that created our, for lack of better words, our crazy thinking, that love is to take care of someone that hurts us, to be loyal, to be dependable. And so I put all my money on the codependent in therapy.
I think that would have a much better chance. I just feel that people, men who are narcissists, and I work with a lot of them, trust me, counseling with them. I just feel that it's a mindset where very often they're living with a different set of rules and regulations than I am. And so, you know, that their reality is very different than the reality that I'm seeing. And no matter how you try to approach them, there's always a way to try to back off from you, because I know how narcissists work, and I know that I can really learn how to feed into them so they'll be nice to me, and I can get information from them and see if I can approach things. And, you know, I always feel like I'm in the boxing ring and trying to, you know, just spar with somebody. Like, you get too close, you have to move back. You know, it's a lot of work, and it's a job that I don't really like doing, but sometimes I have to. It's just part of the process. But I just feel there's very little chance of this changing in someone unless, like you say, someone has to really want to change and say, you know what, I'm never going to be happy unless I change. And with a narcissist, I don't think they ever say that. I think they say, well, I'm going to have to change to a new partner so that I can be happy rather than I have to change myself.
You can't change something that you don't see in yourself. You know, there's a term we learned in college. It's called cognitive dissonance. When you're unhappy and something is going wrong and you're mad at yourself and insecure, you feel bad, you feel uncomfortable. And that cognitive dissonance, that makes you want to get rid of it. But the narcissist doesn't have that feeling because they don't think there's anything wrong with them. Their frustration is other people. And as such, there's no getting better. And you said something that reminded me of the part of the book that I'm writing now. I'm writing about a technique that I created called the observe, don't absorb technique. And it's based upon a saying by George Bernard Shaw that it goes something like this: if you wrestle with pigs, you're always going to get dirty. And besides, the pigs like it. And the point of that is, if you're going to be involved in a relationship with a narcissist, complain that you're always being beaten up or you're always being taken advantage of, because that's the very nature of that relationship. They could only survive if you wrestle with them, you go into that ring. So what I teach my codependent clients for the observe, don't absorb technique, which is also on YouTube, is to be conscious of a metaphorical wrestling ring for which, once you enter it, you are going to be the victim, and to learn to not engage and take on these people who will instigate you and do anything they can to bring you into their domain of control. And so, yes,
and I think part of that is also pushing buttons. I mean, these guys are so great at knowing every weak spot you have and how to push it to make you feel even more inadequate. You know, if you're not playing the game that they're wanting you to play. So if you're not feeding into them, then they're not going to just walk away. They're going to do their best to hurt you on top of it by making you feel inadequate, so that you're going to feel that you're not worthy of anything more than you already have. It's like a really vicious cycle.
Yeah, it's all about power and control. And you're right, that if they can hurt you, they can bring you into their submission. When the narcissist can control the person, and part of that is to make the codependent believe that there's no hope, there's no way out, or that they're not pretty enough or handsome enough or tall enough or short enough or whatever, or likable enough. And if you can brainwash or gaslight that person to believe that no one else will like them and take away, you know, their relationships, their money, and isolate them, that is how these narcissists keep these relationships alive, is to entrap the codependent. And
exactly.
We go back to the dance concept. Who's going to stay with someone who is so harmful to them? The codependent.
So let me ask you this. You're a codependent. You know, you finally come to terms with the fact I am codependent,
mm-hmm.
and I do want to make a change. There is a chance that you can change the codependent behavior through therapy, correct?
Oh, absolutely. You bet. That's what I do for a living. I've been doing it for my whole career.
And you've seen positive changes come from codependence, right?
I've seen miraculous changes. First of all, I am one of those changers. That is, my book was not written because of an idea that I had. My book was written as a result of a journey that I embarked upon in which I figured things out through my own therapy and the help of other therapists. And I took those lessons learned and I started practicing them with my clients, and I saw tremendous growth. And I see miracles all the time. It's not easy. It's very difficult therapy. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of crying. But when we're talking about resolving the trauma that is responsible for the codependency, it's difficult therapy. But boy, oh boy, is there wonderful, wonderful results when someone does the work.
It just hurts me when I see some women, not all of them, of course, but some women who are just in such destructive relationships, and their response to me is always, but I love him so much. Okay, so then I go, let's talk about why you love him. Is he feeding you what you need in the relationship? No. Is he having sex with other people? Yes. One woman I had recently, you know, she has HIV. And she says, and yet I still love him so much, you know, even though I know he's cheating on me, even though he's seeing other men, but I can't let go because I love him so much. And I feel like screaming. But all right,
and I do too, and I don't either.
Right, but I really feel like it.
But that
that's
is
like
why,
total codependent behavior, right?
Yeah, but that is why it's important for your listeners to hear this. The codependency cannot be unlearned. It's not a habit. It is a result of some profound childhood trauma. And so we talked. So we take your that person as an example. They're staying with someone that could ultimately have caused their death. It's because that's what they learned, that's what love is. At the very beginning of their life, when we learn about relationships, that type of narcissistic parent creates the molding for what they're going to be like as an adult. And so when you talk to someone and say, stop it, you know, you shouldn't do it, it doesn't register because it's so deeply embedded. You have to involve them in psychotherapy that addresses those early memories, those traumatic memories of what it was like to live in a family where they never felt loved unless they took care of someone else. And that's when I start to see progress.
But this is something that you can work on yourself, and you can see where the problem stemming from. And how I always tell our women, and I think you would agree with me, Ross, that when you get out of a destructive relationship, and not just for gay men, but any destructive relationship, if you don't learn to love yourself for the right reasons, you're going to keep being picked out by predators who are looking for you, and there's so many of them who are looking for, you know, loving, understanding, caring, not, you know, women who want to fix you. Am I right?
Yeah, you are dead on right. In fact, I came up with this saying that the antidote to codependency is self-love. You cannot be codependent if you understand what self-love is. Of course, the person who is codependent never learned that, and therefore perpetually are hurting themselves more than loving themselves. So you were dead on when you said it's about loving yourself, caring for yourself.
Because my other theory is this, that some women may have had come from good functional homes, and I know they did, and they get into a bad relationship because it does happen. But a lot of our women, if they're honest, including me, I'm the first to say, me, I'm waving my hand, came from destructive environments to start with where there were lots of problems. I had a father who was a sociopath. He liked to burn down buildings, you know, came from an unreal kind of situation. That was not a reality-based one, but I loved my dad, so I just looked at everything he did as being okay. But some women of our women really come from destructive homes where there's alcoholism, where there's abuse, and they're going from one phase of crazy to something that seems less crazy. So they don't even have a base of reality of what good is because they've only known from negative and destructive things. And if you can't straighten that out after a marriage or after a relationship, you're just bound to pick something that's familiar, even if it's horrible.
Exactly.
That's
and what you're talking about is the dance concept. is that you're going to gravitate towards the human magnet center means you're going to find an attraction to something that feels right, that's familiar, that reminds you of what you know about love. And the codependent is, I mean, you think about a date. Just think about, let's say, a Match.com date. And what happens if someone is a narcissist and there's another narcissist? They don't like each other. What happens if it's a codependent and a codependent? Well, they're both waiting for each other to talk, and they both will talk about, well, they're so nice, but there was no chemistry. It's almost like something gets triggered in the codependent when they're with the narcissist. It's like they have a meaning. They listen. They're sympathetic. They feel like they can help them. It's what they've known their whole life. And the narcissist feels so wonderfully attracted to the codependent because finally they found someone that will listen to them and care for them and be sympathetic and empathetic because they haven't had that their whole life. So the two fit perfectly, and that is why these relationships happen, and people that know the two, they just don't get it. Why these two people who aren't, you know, one who hurts the other and the other one that gets hurt, the codependent stays in a relationship. So once we understand the human magnet syndrome, then we have the ability to change. And one of the things that I'm proud of is my book represents an explanation to people that have lived their whole life and not known why they keep repeating these relationships. But because of the book, they now know, and it fuels them, it excites them to do the therapy work, to actually try to learn about self-love, to resolve the trauma, and to learn about being in loving, respecting, and caring relationships.
All right, so here's what I want to end with this thought, Ross. You know, I'm going to be honest. I live by your book, and I keep reading your book. So I really didn't have to ask you these questions tonight because I knew the answers, but everybody else hasn't read it yet, so I try to be a good interviewer. I mean, I am just so hung up on everything you have to say, and I can't explain how important it is. I mean, I will keep promoting it within our network and at every function that we have, but this is a book that's just so important to all of us. And even if you're not in a codependent relationship, but you've been in a bad relationship so you don't get into another bad relationship, I think a lot of that's addressed in here too. But I also feel that people have the opportunity now. I know that you're in Chicago. You do therapy there, correct?
I don't do as much as I used to, but right now...
I know you're training a lot of people too.
Yeah, my trainings are available. I'm writing my second book. And the YouTube channel has really been invaluable to people who are seeking information and potential to solve this problem.
Right, and you can go, and Ross has, I think it's 60-some videos on the YouTube channel, am I correct?
Yes, and just go to YouTube and just type in Ross.
Put in your name.
Yeah,
that's what I did.
B-E-R-G. And you'll find a bunch of stuff. And if you want to get on my mailing list to know when my book, The Codependency Cure, is going to come out, because that's the book where I tell people what to do in order to get out of relationships, just go to humanmagnetsyndrome.com and just subscribe to the newsletter, and I will gladly keep you up to date with what's going on.
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, if it wouldn't be too much to impose of you when your next book comes out, maybe you'll come back again.
Oh,
but in
sure,
the meantime, like I say, women can go right now. You know, it's funny, I coined a new terminology for something you keep referring to with gaslighting. When you have a gay husband, I call it gay lighting because, you know, it's a gay man who's gaslighting you, so we call it gay lighting in my network here. But it's so true. You know, if people make you think that you're, you know, going crazy, you can go crazy. So that's why becoming strong and independent is really the key to everything. And this book is really phenomenal, not just because it's on a topic that I'm personally interested about, but I see so many of our women who can be helped by this. So you can get this on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. If you have any problem finding any material of Ross's, just drop me a note and I'll send it to you. And Ross, I'm going to, you know, my new newsletter will be out in 2 days, so I'm going to put in your YouTube channel also so women can start watching and your website and, you know, tell them where to order the book.
And if you
like I say, I'm in awe of you, Ross. You have a new fan here. No, I'm telling you the truth. Do you ever get to the East Coast?
A lot of time. I used to live out east. I went to graduate school in Boston and college in Baltimore. I was in the Army and in the Washington, D.C. area. So the East Coast
If you come to New York, I know some wonderful therapist who would love to meet you there, too. So if you're ever interested in doing anything there, if you could let me know, I'd be really appreciative.
Thank you.
But in the meantime, once again, the human magnet syndrome and why we love people who hurt us. And, Ross, I'll send you a copy of my upcoming newsletter where I put a whole big story about you in there. So thank you so much for joining us. And to all of our listeners, we have another therapist who will be here. I don't know if you're familiar with her, Ross. She's somebody from Australia who works on curing people who have gone through this narcissism.
Melanie Evans?
Yeah. Do you know her?
I know of her, yes.
She'll be here next week. So it'll be interesting to get her concepts. But, you know, I'll certainly be talking about you next week with her, too. So thank you so much for being part of this. And we'll look forward to when you can come back again when your new book comes out.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me on your show.
It's our pleasure. All right, everybody, have a wonderful week. And I'll be here back with you next week. And we'll go out and we'll end with our Beatles Blackbird. Good night and love to all of you for the week. And thanks for the inspiration, Ross.
Get back.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the line of a dark black night.
You were only waiting for this moment to arrive.